This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 14th of July. Happy Bastille Day to everyone out there. And a lot to get through today. I think some very interesting things going on in the market and in the headlines. John Hardy here, flying solo again today, but let's try to take us through, I'll try to take us through everything that's going on here across asset classes. Now, just to start off with a headline, I saw a very interesting mixed session in the U.S. today in the equity market, and I'll get to this is the big driver of especially some of the interesting patterns and what unfolded in the sort of the major tech indices on that interest rate sensitivity theme. But just to remind what we looked at yesterday on slide two, we're still seeing the momentum divergence if you use something like a nine-period RSI, but really not to, you know, pointing towards any major breakdown until we get to something like 4225 on a Fibonacci basis. That would be the retracement of the most recent big rally wave. And ahead of that, you would have things like the 21-day moving average coming in very considerably higher there, 4285, if I can read the chart correctly. In the pattern of what reacted to what unfolded yesterday, again, interest rate sensitive stuff first, actually finding, and I'll get to this in a moment, the reaction to the CPI data in the US, a big spike there, actually saw, while of course the very front of the curve reactions in terms of Fed expectations did jolt a bit higher, the longest rates actually started to come off after a bit of a flutter in trading. And this is the one trick wonder, or the one sort of single-minded focus of the market, at least that section of the market. And we saw a rally to new all-time highs before, later in the day, a weak T-bond auction actually saw a reversal and yields came back in firmly higher and actually closed towards the highs of the day and put some pressure on tech stocks. But the broader, or some of the small caps and the value stocks in particular, were having a weak day of it to begin with. So a lot of, again, this is something we emphasized in a couple of charts at the start of this week, a lot of divergence in this market. And I think especially if this CPI data, for whatever reason, yields at the long end of the US curve, head back a bit higher here, we could see some broad pressure on the market. Notice on the performance of the different equity theme baskets we have, that the crypto and blockchain really suffering an ugly day yesterday, down almost 4%. And for good reason, as Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera, under pretty considerable pressure. Now let's look at that CPI release. On slide three, on the right, have a chart of the month-on-month in blue, which is actually where we're seeing the most incredible readings. So we now have a cluster of three readings. 0.9% was the one yesterday, but a cluster of three readings, all of which in a row, are clear of everything since essentially the early 1980s. So almost 40-year a high end of short-term inflation. The year-on-year, the black, still quite impressive that we've risen to year-on-year inflation levels not seen since the early 90s. There is a temptation by many to still want to call this transitory. The little chart or table on the left there showing the official BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics report, this which produces the CPI data. And you can see the little blue marks there showing the degree to which the used car and trucks category is just, you know, incredible gains of 10%, even more than that in June, resulting in a 45% year-on-year increase, just mind-boggling numbers. And of course, a considerable driver of this. But in the red boxes, I'm showing that still there's other categories that are showing some pretty hefty inflation and a cluster of readings that if you annualize it is still at a very high level. Something like shelter down there on the lowest of the red boxes. If you annualize the last 3 months, you get about a 4.9% increase in shelter costs. And that could be expected to rise quite a bit more as the shelter costs tend to go up in a lagging fashion after the rise in housing prices, which, as we know, are spiking quite aggressively in the U.S. But other categories, also interesting, apparel, this category called services, less energy services, whatever that is. And even looking at some of the year-on-year readings are quite hefty. So we're going to see, in other words, some very considerable negative readings in some of these categories to get this core inflation number back lower and bring about the argument that this has indeed been transitory inflation. We're not so sure we're going to get there, and I'll get to a couple of reasons why as well on the political headline front. But for now, while it was a pretty straightforward reaction in the sort of the front end of the U.S. yield curve, Fed expectations, actually, I would say relative to the scale of the surprise in this data, it was quite modest. So if you look at something like the December 2022 Eurodollar, so the short-term interest rate future that predicts where short-term rates will be at that time, a full year and a half from now, essentially, four ticks, four basis points was the reaction we got there. We're still 2 to 3 basis points from the highs for the cycle, which were quickly achieved in the wake of the June FOMC meeting. So market reacted. It's not losing its mind. And then at the 30-year, so the very longest end of the U.S. yield curve, and the 10-year was largely like this as well. On slide 4, I've broken down. So on the left, I have the so-called ultra bond futures for the U.S. This essentially tracks the 30-year treasury. You can see that there's a little cluster of a choppy price action right around the release. At first, they sold off a little bit before actually rallying to day highs. So a pretty powerful yield curve flattening. And then the huge slide you see later in the session, starting at 5 o'clock GMT, was down to the auction. So we had a 30-year treasury auction yesterday. Demand came in at the weakest in about 2 years. And the bid to cover on the demand side, foreign bidders stepping a bit away, et cetera. And this spooked the market, and we saw a considerable slide there. And that's what got the U.S. Big caps equities turned around, et cetera. On the right, however, you can see that while this is important for sort of maybe confirming this bottom here, that maybe the 2% level is a bridge too far on yields falling. We would still need to see at least a move back towards 215, I think, to really reverse this full, to see a full reversal of this latest slide. And I've marked a line there around the 220 basis point level for the 30-year as important there. So we've seen there's some respect for the risk here, but this is still, to me, a market that is only sort of shifted a little bit in terms of losing its confidence in the transitory story here. So that is going to be the key. And then what are the stories that are going to unfold here from here that will encourage a belief that inflation could prove more sustained? And that, of course, has to be on the fiscal side. And a couple things. I don't have the headline on this slide 5. This is a different headline. But first, I want to mention this, and that is that these child care tax, child tax payments. So basically, it's a child tax credit that was part of Biden's $1.9 trillion plan that was rolled out. That was the, if you recall, the last stimulus check back in March. Well, part of this was child care. Child tax credits. And these are rolling out starting basically this week. So monthly payments from now until the end of the year. So in other words, this is not just about being able to file your taxes and claim some tax credits on that form next year in this cycle into April, but people are actually getting checks in the mail or directly deposits to their bank account. It's for anybody with a child of 17 and under, and it's slightly more if your child is 6 and under, and it's for all households earning $75,000 or less. I'm not sure that actually that's households or individuals. Regardless, it's the lower end of the income spectrum, and that means a higher proclivity to spend this money. It adds up. This is about 40 million households with one or more children, and it adds up to a decent percentage of GDP per month. So we could be seeing that reflected in persistence, perhaps, in things like retail sales, but certainly economic activity in general. And then on top of this, we have a news item here. I put it up a Politico graphic from the link you can see on slide 5, that while the Democrats, we've sort of, gotten a bit complacent on the ability of this Biden administration to do more forceful fiscal after the big splash in the initial weeks and a couple of months of the administration, because we're seeing how these bipartisan talks are grinding away. And then, maybe we're going to come up with something in the $600 to $700 billion size on infrastructure, and only straight up infrastructure. Democrats looking at putting together on top of that, a go it alone $3.5 trillion spending plan to fulfill Biden's agenda. The critical thing here is whether that kingmaker vote in the Senate, Joe Manchin, is going to hold this up, and whether they can get what percentage of this kind of spending they can get through the so-called reconciliation process that avoids the whole need to get the Senate filibuster and the need to get opposing party votes on board with this. But it's a signal. In the meantime, we have 6 months of child payments helping to sustain on the fiscal side, but we'll need to watch the course of this spending plan, and especially whether Joe Manchin is willing to go forward. He said he won't sign any infrastructure deal. Of course, infrastructure deal is separate. I think any general deal was his line of thinking. He does not want to sign any deal that does not have, that goes on straight partisan lines, and as well as against spending that does not have some kind of offsetting income to pay for it. So this is an interesting topic to watch in the coming days and weeks. All right, now elsewhere, we have the general theme of central banks continuing to unwind the policy accommodation from the pandemic. And the RBNZ managed to really quite strongly surprise overnight with an immediate intent to halt their QE. So basically from next week, they will stop the QE purchases. And you can see on slide 6, the effect this had on the 2-year swap rate. So pricing in more tightening sooner and over the next 2 years. And what a remarkable recovery there from 0% just before the vaccine success was announced back in November. You can see on the left side of that small chart inset to almost, well, it actually achieved 100 basis points overnight. And the scale of the surprise also reflected in the price action on something like Aussie Kiwi. You can see on the right there. I suspect this quite remarkable divergence between the RBNZ and the RBA is pretty much towards its maximum. We have an RBA that really wants to take things easy and see some key indicators coming in line, especially on wages, and has this awkward yield curve control policy that would have to be sort of backtracked before it could move ahead with anything resembling a rate hike. But in any case, I think this divergence is remarkable. It's a theme. It's great. It could have some follow-on momentum towards maybe 105 and Aussie Kiwi, but I suspect we're getting near the maximum on that. And we have a Bank of Canada up today. I'll cover that actually when we get to the calendar. Now, for the dollar more broadly, we have again this surprise U.S. CPI data. It does suggest that the market is going to lean a bit more towards the Fed having to acknowledge this on some level, perhaps beginning a taper. Whereas the ECB, as we discussed, is talking about what it will be doing post its PEPP purchases, which are set to run out in March of next year. Likely some kind of perma QE announcement that has the euro and the euro dollar under pressure. You see that on slide 7 with the euro dollar chart. It's actually achieved this neckline area. Arguably, we would need to see it down towards 117.05 and breaking 117 for a larger break here. But I still find it an interesting technical setup for that pair. All right, moving swiftly on, we have earnings reports out yesterday. The two mega banks, JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs, reporting. There were some positives and some negatives. The negatives mostly on trading activity. And regardless, the market took it despite positive headline numbers. They decided to focus on the negatives, and those stocks sold off somewhat. Today, we have an interesting test in the banking sector for the Wells Fargo, which is more Main Street focused. And I've put up a chart, 5-year chart of Wells Fargo on slide 8, where you can see that it's basically only recovered to close to back to where it was pre-pandemic. But it's more Main Street focused. It's gotten less of a boost from all the shenanigans and the crazy activity that we've seen in financial markets off the back of the pandemic response. So interesting to see what they're saying on Main Street level and where their guidance is. And then we have Delta Airlines out as well. Of course, the concerns related to COVID variants, et cetera, have been kind of weighing on that stock for some time. How are they dealing with that? Or what is their guidance relative to those concerns? That'll be the interesting one. Other interesting one out of the U.S. today. But BlackRock also reporting, and some other names you can see there on slide 8. All right, as indicated, let's go to the macro calendar here. And we have a bit more interest now than would have otherwise been the case with the testimony from Fed Chair Powell today before a House panel. with the inflation levels running where they are, do politicians pick up the baton and offer some pressure there? Especially, I think, just from a populist angle, I think the biggest risk is around housing, getting on the housing ladder with housing prices leaping, rising by leaps and bounds. How well advised is the Fed's $40 billion per month in continued MBS purchases? That could be an angle there, but still not expecting that much here. I think it's more about the next FOMC meeting the week after next. And once we get into the August timeframe, please have a listen to yesterday's podcast, the discussion with Stein Jakobsen on the factors that are really confusing our ability to get signals from the Treasury market here in the near term. Okay, elsewhere, we have the Bank of Canada up today, a rate, no rate change expected there. Obviously, we're going to look at guidance. Canada is opening up. It's quite likely. It looks like expectations are pretty strong for a further reduction of QE, which is currently running at 3 billion Canadian per month. Any surprise beyond, let's call it a billion per week reduction in that QE rate or stronger guidance could see Dollar Canada on the retreat again. It has reached a major resistance area, 125 to 126, although, of course, the status of the dollar is also important there. Turkish Central Bank out today. No rate change expected. The market consensus is they'll have the luxury to actually look for cutting rates later this year, but guidance will be very important for that stock. Emerging market credit has been quite solid of late, but if this strong dollar continues, and if we get especially higher U.S. long yields, could begin to pressure the EM space a bit more. And then note to Aussie traders out there that the latest employment report is out in Australia overnight. RBA is quite sensitive to everything employment related, so keep an eye on that, as well as the Chinese GDP numbers, where we're expecting a deceleration in the next couple of quarters in growth. So those could be important for the Asian session overnight. And then I want to wrap it off with and just, of course, the U.S. retail sales at the end of the week is quite interesting as well. With a look at the technicals on the weekly for the S&P 500, which you can see on our appendix with the five-year chart of the S&P 500 on slide 10. And you can see we're seeing some divergence, arguably triple divergence now, if we're getting confirmation with a week close to this week's trading. So now that we've seen a third sort of little bump, and the bumps may be peaking here a little bit lower than the prior two bumps in the MACD. So declining momentum while the price action has been taken higher here. So maybe some note of caution. I do feel like this market is somewhat overbought. It could be in for at least a couple percent correction on a technical basis. But trying to time those things is very difficult. And just some indicators suggesting that there may be a bit of exhaustion here. All right, that's a quick run through of all the stuff that's hitting the market that I could come up with this morning at least. And that's a wrap. And I'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.